If they ask for octopus in my restaurant, I can't serve it to them, so I'm going to say no. But if we've got it, we're going to take care of it.
I am a servant. I am here for the guest. I am providing a service to the guest. They are spending their money in my establishment. So what am I giving them?
Hello, and welcome to Working with me, Dan Doriani, hosting a podcast where we explore faith, work, culture, and the way believers can make a difference in their corner of the world. Hello, everyone. It's a delight to have two of my longtime friends and a third new friend with me today. We have Jimmy Fiala and Mike Duffy, who both own restaurants in the St. Louis area and fit in my beloved category of people who are mildly famous and minor geniuses. They're mildly famous for producing really good food in a lovely, warm, receptive environment, and also for treating people well and creating an atmosphere where people like to work. John Perkins, who is my co-laborer, my number two here, is also a restaurateur, and so he's going to be asking some pretty sharp questions of these two friends of mine. Welcome, Mike and Jimmy.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So both of you have restaurants, and Jimmy, we would perhaps describe your place as fine dining, and Mike, we might say yours is a family-oriented or sports bar and pub. So different and yet similar in a lot of ways because of the feel they get. Your places have a lot of things in common. Can I ask you, Jimmy, first, what drew you to this business? And then, Mike, if you would answer the same question.
I think when I was like thinking through where I came from in this world and the providence of God to put me into the restaurant business, it was a series of events throughout my entire life that drew me to food. I was always the child in the family that would try different things, that would pay attention to food and different dishes when we would go out as a family. And so I was always adventuresome. I loved food. I loved the dining experience as a kid, but I didn't pay much attention to it. I went to college because my dad was an entrepreneur. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But when I graduated college, I didn't have any passions or loves or anything in the business world. I had a business degree and that was it. And I took some time off of, I was working in Dallas for a little bit, and then I took a job working on a cruise ship. There was a job opening in the galley. I asked if they would train me there. And it was just like day one, it just clicked for me as something that I fell in love with instantly. But I still didn't think of it as like a career path. But it took me a couple years of working and trying to find jobs that might be in the insurance business or in the banking business after my business degree. And I just kept going back to the restaurant or the food industry. And then slowly but surely, I started thinking, wow, maybe I could do this
maybe
for
I
a
could
living.
Start a restaurant.
And so that's kind of the way that I just moved into it. It wasn't by design originally. It just kind of fell and just kind of worked out for me.
Flowed out of your interests.
Yeah.
Mike, how did you get into it?
Similar but different. I said I was working at Six Flags when I was in college and going to college, and I hated college, so I said, I'm leaving. I took a full-time job at Six Flags, and so I worked 5 years here and then 5 years down in Atlanta in the food business. So we were down there running 22 restaurants and 200 portable carts and catering events to 5,000. So I was managing people, but you know, and I was running restaurants, but I didn't, different from Jimmy, I didn't care about food. Food to me is like a hammer. I could care less. But I knew systems and how to hire people and how to train people. And so when I left there, I went to work in Taco Bell and learned fast food. And then I was bartending and managing different restaurants around town. And then I worked at Westboro Country Club for 4 years. And we were eating out and going to places, and we never found a place that we liked. This was back in 1985, like that. And I said, there's no place we like where we can get a cold beer and watch sports on TV and a burger. So we opened up Mike Duffy's in 1986.
That's great. So now both of you, curiously, are elders in your churches and churches I've been in and seen you operate faithfully in. So obviously, one thing you don't do at your places is let people get drunk or let people hurt other people. You protect your staff in whatever ways might be necessary. But how do you express your faith and work? Mike, I'll put you first. You both have opened your restaurants to Bible studies. You've shared your faith with your workers, people who work for you. We call that sharing your faith at work. You also express your faith in your work. How does that happen with you, Mike, first, and then Jimmy, tell how you do it.
Well, one of the things you talked about was just, you know, care for the people that work for you. Your daughters work for me, and they were great employees. And so we care for those. We take care of them. You mentioned drinking. You know, we try to protect both our customers and the people that work for us. And so we don't let people drink too much. We don't serve people who have a problem with alcohol, and we don't serve minors. It's pretty simple like that.
Jimmy?
When I think of caring for the employees, I think of them as they come from different backgrounds. You know, most of them are not Christians. Most of them do not know the Lord. But they, for the most part, the people that I hire are, they're really trying to be good people. Mm. And they're trying to, you know, survive in this world, and they have a job that they enjoy coming to. And I try to facilitate that. I try to give them reason to be there. I try to build relationships with each employee on an individual basis, because I'm not a big chain, so I don't have to set up like rules that apply to every single employee. Mm-hmm. Every employee is a unique person. So the more I'm around the restaurants, and I love being around the restaurants, the more I'm able to allow them more freedom. I allow them freedom to talk to the tables in a unique way that each person is gifted to talk to the table and so forth. And so, you know, I've had some employees that I never have to worry about. And other ones, I just kind of say, you know, kind of rein that in a little bit. And let's bring it in and I try to
discipline them. You guide them.
I guide them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's rare that I have to discipline an employee.
Gentle discipline. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah, right. It's nurturing them.
Yeah, right.
I was there last night, and Sonny did a good job on talking to the tables.
Oh, great. and so those are the type of things that I do, and I allow my employees to have a drink after work, mm-hmm. you know, but we don't sit around till 3 o'clock trying to solve the world's problems over drinks.
Yeah, that's so you both operate, I'm going to pass the baton very soon to John, but you both operate the term people used to use is in loco parentis, kind of like a parent, kind of like a dad to the whole place. That's my sense of both of you, because it's an industry where not everybody has a real high skill set, and you know, you work late at night, you're maybe tense, you can end up staying up really late and unwinding in ways that aren't very constructive, and I know you both try to take care of your employees. Let me pass the microphone to John Perkins, who has had his own restaurant for a number of years and is also a man who thinks a lot about food. John?
I kind of want to jump ahead in our list of questions just because it seems appropriate for what we're talking about. But I know that you, Jimmy, specifically have done a great job of mentoring individuals over the years. And that's a little bit more of a kind of a pointed act, you know, participation in the life of your employees. But who have been the mentors in your life? How was that set up for you as an example, or did you not have that? But I'm curious, if you did, who were they? Both of you maybe speak on that for a little bit.
As I look back, I had mentors in the restaurant world. Like I paid attention, and I learned, and when I was in Chicago, I worked for a chef named Paul Bartolotta, and he was fantastic. And then I was in New York, and I worked for Danielle Ballou, and he was amazing also. And they were both great. They both ran restaurants differently, that was, I mean, I worked for Paul over 30 years ago for 2 years, and I worked for Danielle over 25 years ago, and so for 2 years again. So they were mentors in the restaurant business. But then mentoring me today, I would say that I learned different ways of being mentored. I pay attention to, I go out and eat at other restaurants in St. Louis, and I pay attention to what they're doing and stuff like that. But it's also, there's different things like, you know, you're in Bible study, you're going to church, you're listening to the sermons, you're reading the scriptures, you're doing different things in your life, and the Lord actually mentors you and moves on you and impresses different things, like, how do I take care of these people? And I'll bounce ideas off of my mother or my father and people that I respect in my world, like where God has placed me today.
So anybody can be your mentor, you might
right,
say. Any godly, wise person.
And I need those type of things. And that's just the way my brain works. If I sit under my pastor and he'll be preaching, and it's literally, my mind is like, well, how do I do that at work? How do I do that in my family? How do I do that and so forth? And that's how my world works.
Yeah, it's what Jimmy said. It's more, you know, put a different word than mentor, is teachability. Is that when we're going along at any of the places we worked, we listened to the people who knew what they were doing, and we learned from them. So we learned systems, how to set up systems. The best mentors I had were two girls I worked with at Taco Bell who taught me how to scrub a pot. And they had systems, and everybody knew what they were supposed to do, and they followed through on those systems. So I learned that from them. And also, I had good friends that worked alongside me at Six Flags for 10 years, five here. And then we worked together down at Six Flags at Atlanta for 5 years. And we'd learn from each other on how to work and work hard and love what we do.
So I hear both of you saying in different ways that you have no place, no interest in what we would call the old distinction between sacred and secular, that, you know, people who work in the church or missionaries or nonprofit work that tries to honor the Lord is sacred, and then you're doing secular work. You're trying to apply your faith at your work all the time. Yeah, Mike?
Correct, yeah. And, you know, there, like you said, there's no distinction between the sacred and the secular, because the things that my dishwasher is just as important as the guy who preaches a sermon on Sunday, because he's doing a job and so is the preacher doing a job, and they both take pride in what they do.
When I get to the restaurant, there's 25 to 30 employees at one restaurant and another 25 at the other restaurant, and it's interesting that I can go months where everything's kind of working and I'm just being fatherly or whatever you want to call it. I'm just showing up to work every day and it's great. Everything's good. But then I'll get into a situation where somebody's being obstinate at work and being divisive in the restaurant, or they've gotten themselves into a pickle or a tragedy or something bad. And those are usually different experiences, like talking about my faith most of the time. But then when somebody really gets into a jam in their life or somewhere, that usually opens up more of a time where I can pray with them, or I can express their greater need in this world and express the faith and convey the faith over to people at a different level. And some people, you know, you're not going there because there's some pain back in their history that has built a wall or something, that you just have to be sensitive to where everybody is. And that's one of the good things that I have, is I have friendships with everybody. So I know pretty much who people are, what their backgrounds are, and where they exist at any given time, so I can be more appropriate in my response and my talking or sharing faith or
that's just great. Love. One of the things, I'll give it to you in a second. One of the things we say here is that we at the Center for Faith and Workers, we warn people not to say, I just serve food. I just make hamburgers. I just make desserts or salads or whatever. And I don't hear either of you saying, I just at all, not I just make food. I just make a living. So we're grateful that John wants to ask both of you a question about hospitality.
Yeah, it's funny listening to you both talk about how you care about your employees. I think a lot of times we think of hospitality in the restaurant business as something that's facing our guests or our customer. But actually, you have a lot of hospitality toward your own employees, just in the way that you care for them. But if you could maybe take a few minutes and tell us how you define hospitality. And then in terms of that intersection between faith and work, how does your faith inform what hospitality looks like for you?
The hospitality to me is, there's a lot of people in this that I read about hospitality a lot in my industry, the fine dining industry. And we really, a lot of people say they have hospitality, but then you eat there and they're like, no, you will eat it this way. There's no substitutions. There's no additions. There's nothing to this food. You eat it the way I want. And that's really a chef-driven, an ego-driven thing. We are bendable. And the way we greet our guests, because one of the things, when it comes to hospitality, we, as a restaurateur, need to remember, I am a servant. I am here for the guest. I am providing a service to the guest. They are spending their money in my establishment. So what am I giving them? And I want to do a good job. And that's one of the things why social media is so foreign to me, because it's like tooting my own horn all day. And it's like, I would much rather let word of mouth spread my business. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean I don't advertise or I don't try different things, but it just, I think hospitality is a focus, a mindset, a heart set that you're here for the guest. I'm there for my employees. I'm there for my distributors and my food purveyors and so forth. And I build relationships in that. I don't just beat them up and demand it. I don't tell the guests what they're going to do. If somebody comes in and they've had a bad day, I try to come around and try to figure out how to put a smile on their face and how to do different things to bring joy into their lives.
Yeah, if I could kind of go off on that just a little bit, I think just to explain some of that context for people that might be listening, there has been, I don't know, maybe last 10, 15, 20 years, a bit of a shift maybe in the way people approach and think about dining, and certainly from the chef end of things, where it has become all about the chef. And so asking people, instead of setting place and welcoming folks and making the experience about them, it is more, come to me, I'm going to show you what I do. It is the presentation that I put on the plate. That's the most important thing. And you're basically saying, hey, we actually want to reorient that relationship. And it's not you coming to me, but I, as a chef and restaurant owner, are really setting a table for you to come and experience something.
It's a welcoming. I'm welcoming. I'm thankful for everybody that comes into the restaurant. You're glad they're there, and you don't know why they're there. You don't know, but you should always have a thankful response to anybody walking into your restaurant. And there will be people that are troublesome, quarrelsome, whatever you want to call it, that come in, and it's not just you have to welcome them, but you have to guide them and bring them along and give them more than they expected when they were coming in.
Yeah, we're in a hospitality, as I call it, the service business, and we are there to serve people. And the reorientation we have to do most of the time is with reorientating our employees to make sure they understand what's important. We try to serve great food and give great service every single time somebody comes in, not just once in a while, but every single time. And so I have to remind my employees, I said, we're here for them. These guys come in, I tell them they got $20 in their hand and they want to give it to us. And so our job is to take it and to give them great food and great service every time. And it's not about them. You know, I even go to what the thermostat is set at. You know, I go around and ask my customers, is it cold in here? How's it feel in here? And they say, well, it's cold or it's not cold. And I go and adjust the thermostat for the customers. Now, the servers are running around and they're hot and they keep turning the air conditioning on. I said, leave it alone.
I heard this was a C-level guy for Chick-fil-A talking about how they approach handling their customers. And one of the things, now this wasn't in the context of hospitality, but actually what he said had implications for hospitality. And he talked about the need for every single employee at Chick-fil-A to provide value. And the way he framed it was that a lot of times restaurant owners can think of customers as really a glorified ATM machine. They've got some money. I want to extract that money. But they train their people at Chick-fil-A to actually reverse that dynamic. Instead of what can I extract out, what can I put in? And the more that I can put in, the more I can provide value, and not just food, but beyond food, the more I can provide value to my guest, the greater that relationship's going to be, not just one time, but over and over and over again, because you're establishing a relationship. That has tremendous implications, I would think, for us to think about what it means to be hospitable, is creating a sense of value for someone, and not just like, this is transactional, but it's deeper and more profound than that.
That's what the first person I hired at the Kirkwood location was my wife, Katie, and she is the best. And she now works as a server over in the Richmond Heights location. And every person that comes in there for lunch wants her to wait on them because she makes it personal. She hugs them. She says thank you. She knows what they drink. She knows what they eat. She knows what they ate last time. And she greets them personally with a hug and a smile every single time. And everybody that walks in the door at Richmond Heights wants her.
How do you think your faith actually inspires that? How would you connect those two? How does your faith inspire your sense of hospitality and the treatment of your guests?
I almost feel like, can I just answer it for these guys? Because I've eaten in both of their restaurants a number of times. And then they can riff off what I say.
Thank you.
So for a while, I was having a meal late at night every month in Mike's Place. And it's partly because the place where we were meeting beforehand was about four blocks away, but there are other places to eat in Kirkwood, and we just kept going there because it was just friendly. It was simply friendly, cheerful. Somebody comes, they greet you. You felt loved and cared for. And by the way, they would come the right amount. They didn't come pestering you like trying to be your best friend. They were aware that you were there for an experience and they were serving your experience. And Jimmy's Place, if I may say, it is fine dining, so you expect a sort of a culinary experience, but the experience is not just for your taste buds, it's also for your whole person, because the whole person is welcomed there as well. A little bit differently, but still a whole person welcome. John, you have a question, and you proposed it, but I'm going to ask it. So restaurants have sort of two sides. They have a front and a back. And the front is, you know, pictures and signed autographs or artwork, and beautiful tables and lovely forks and knives and spoons and silver candelabras and goblets and so forth. And in the back, it's kind of different. Can you just walk through, and I'm taking this question, John, because I want you to have a chance to comment on it too, because you also have a restaurant. Can you just tell me about the challenges of running a restaurant and how it's hard and how you manage the chaos of moving from the speed and the mess in the back to the calm and the beauty and the order?
I'll tell you a story.
In the front. Go ahead, please.
I got one of the girls that works for me, Rosie, has been there for 37 years since we opened. And she was a dishwasher, and now she's a server. And she is just great. She's fast. She's happy. Like you said, she's at the table. She'll take care of you quick. She knows what you want. She'll come back, ask what you need. She won't interrupt you. But then, you know, if somebody's being, you know, not nice to her, you know, she's still going to kill them with kindness. But then she goes back into the walk-in, closes the door in a walk-in, and she starts screaming obscenities. So that's what it's like sometimes in the hospitality business. You're still going to be nice and kind to all your customers, you know, because they're all, you know, that's where my faith impacts at, John, is that they all have great worth, but sometimes they're pills and sometimes they're mean to the servers. And so my servers know to take care of them and call a manager if they have to, but to go in the back and they can yell and scream in a walk-in.
Yeah. John, why don't you go? Tell me about your experience. You're my co-host, but you're also a restaurateur.
I tend to think of restaurants and, you know, the hustle and bustle and the chaos a little bit like a theater production. It feels like a lot of times, especially as you approach your opening hour, all the work that has to be done, the side work, the roll-ups of your linens with your fork and knife and the glass that has to be polished and everything in its right place and the food prep that has to be done and prepared and ready. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of activity, a lot of running around, moving around. And then there's the grand reveal when you open your doors and then people flood in. And it's a production every single night. And, you know, chaos is an inevitable part of that. You know, we certainly try to make sure that people, if they're going to scream in the walk-in, please go do that. But don't keep it on the floor. Take it off the floor. We try to manage those dynamics as much as possible.
We said the same thing as what Jimmy was saying earlier. You said the curtain's up, and I tell my people, I said, you're on. 11 o'clock, the curtain's up, and it's time to get on. And you put your happy face on, which was what Jimmy was saying, is that, you know, you put your smile on and you go out there. I don't care if you just are hungover from last night or you're late or your pants are ripped. You put your happy face on, you go out there and you take care of your customers.
Jimmy, you want anything?
I think it's, for me, I have a little bit different perspective just because my training is the chef. So the back of the house is my realm, so to speak. And so I think one of the ways that we think about it is I have a culture in the back of the house that follows me. And my idea is if somebody needs something from the front of the house that's specific or special orders, I would do it. So all my guys in the kitchen are like, well, of course I would do it. Jimmy would do it. I would do it. That's what we do here. And so that frees up our front of the house to take 97 unique individuals that come in for dinner on a Friday night with different requests. They have a comfortability to know that whatever this guest needs, that kitchen's going to provide it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to take care of us. And then that means that the kitchen is loved by the wait staff because the wait staff can get whatever they need to make that guest happy from the kitchen. And so that it builds this cohesion between the front of the house. So many restaurants have this divide between the back of the house, front of the house. They're always fighting and they're mad at the waiters because they're putting in special orders and no cheese, add burger, do this, do that, and all this kind of stuff. And it can become stressful for a cook, for sure. So you can understand it. But the foundation of the restaurant being a chef, I think it really changes that dynamic to take care of people.
Let me make two observations. So Mike is more oriented, I'll say, toward process and the business side. Jimmy more toward food side. But you both agree that you want to serve the customer. I got to tell you, as a person who eats out fairly often, I just quiver a tiny bit when I say, hey, I want this meal, but it says sweet potatoes, and I don't like sweet potatoes. Can I substitute baked potato, rice, whatever? And once in a while, they say, no, you can't. That's the way it is. And I think, but you both are, of course you can substitute something for the sweet potatoes. What would you like?
What Jimmy was saying is the heart of hospitality is we're in the yes business, not in the no business. If we have it, if they ask for octopus in my restaurant, I can't serve it to them, so I'm going to say no. But if we've got it, we're going to take care of it. And that's what, you know, the chaos in the back of the house comes when the servers are yelling stuff at the cooks and the cooks are trying to keep, you know, get the tickets out and they have a picture inside their head like an air traffic controller. And if a server's coming in going back, 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 back at them, you know, they're going to lose the picture. So you want to have some order in there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges that I've encountered over the years is that mindset of the people that work for me to make sure that they understand that we're here for the guests. And that, you know, I don't know how many conversations, how many times I've gone over, I want to substitute this kitchen. No, me. Yes, we're going to do that. Like, I'm sorry. I know it's difficult, but it's not about you. It's not about you. It's about the person out in the dining room. And we're, if it's possible, to your point, Mike, if it's possible, then the answer is yes. There's some things I can't do. I don't have the ability to execute that, so it'll have to be no. But if we have the capability of doing something, then the answer has to be yes. And it's sort of like a positional thing. It's an ego thing. It's like, okay, I need to understand where my place is relative to you. You are my guest in my house. I'm going to serve you. And that is not always a consistent mindset or perspective, I think, across our industry.
Well, it's also it also comes down to like training and so forth. So a server, they can come back and say, we serve a beet salad at the Crossing. And it's tossed, diced up beets, and they're tossed with a little sherry vinaigrette, but it's very light. It's not swimming in dressing or anything like that. And I'll get like a waiter coming back like, beet dressing on the side. I was like, really? Is that really how we need to be selling this? Like, there's a way to educate the guest in a simple way that, you know what? Let me just tell you a little something about this beet salad. It's really light dressing. Now, I suggest you try it with the dressing on it because it does make it a little bit better, but it won't be swimming and it won't be tons of grease or anything like that. I think you trust me on this.
It's a first-time customer is what we're seeing right here, of course.
And,
right?
Or yeah. Even, you know, typically.
First time getting the beets, right. They don't
and
know
then so time. that's a waiter taking charge of the table and guiding them in a way because it's really not doing anybody any favors to take the – have to stop everything in the back and do everything on the side because it's kind of silly.
So what I hear is an effort to empower the server to help the client make the right choice. But let me go to something a little bit different. I don't know your story in this question I want to ask, but I know that both of you, Mike and John, have been in the restaurant business for a while and have had some ups and downs, have had some real challenges over the years. Jimmy, I don't know if you ever had a near-death experience of your restaurant, so this may be more immediately for them, but it's hard. Restaurant work is hard. Most restaurants fail. We know that. You've both been in business for a long time. John, you've been in pretty long. How do you stay grounded in the ups and downs when you can be pretty high and then you can slide down into a period of distress? What keeps you grounded as a worker, employee, employer of employees, and, you know, a man of God?
It's faith, and you know I get on my knees and I pray. I said, God, we need help over here. I've been praying for people, employees, for a long time, and God provides. And you know, we get to the point where we've got only so many people working, and we're overworking our good people because we can't get good help. And so I get on my knees and pray in the morning, and I get up and go to work.
So one of your great challenges just is simply finding good workers, right?
Yes.
John?
I mean, if I'm being honest, I would say I'm not sure that I always do stay grounded. I think I really struggle sometimes with that. I think the times that I've done well, I am reminded that in similar moments in the past that God has provided. And so in those moments of feeling untethered, chaotic, and I'm inclined to panic, the place that I go to is I try to remember previous acts of faithfulness and kindness. And most of the time that works. Sometimes it doesn't, and I still panic and I still freak out. But that is what has more often than not served to calm me and to provide some comfort in those moments.
Jimmy?
I've owned my own restaurants for almost 26 years now. And I would say I've had up and down. I've had two restaurants that I've had to close. I've had those. I've had even with the Crossing, which is my home base, so to speak, there were years where I could only afford to be me on the line with two other guys, Monday through Thursday, and then my partner would come in on the weekends and work nights, and there were different challenges there, and there were weeks where I didn't know if I was going to meet payroll. Like we would have, I had this one really special couple, and they would call up on a bad week, and they'd call me up on Friday night and said, can we come in tomorrow night? And I'd say, yeah, we'll make it happen. They'd come in and they'd spend, you know, they'd bring in three of their friends. I could make a table of six or eight, and they'd spend $2,000 or $3,000 just on them. And then they'd tip my employees on top of it, and I'd make payroll. And it wasn't because I wasn't out begging them to come in. They would just show up on that day. And so you just look at the Lord providing and being thankful and trusting and just
amen,
and just doing what was necessary, though, also to protect, because I knew, like, every week I'd have to pay this much in my bills, so I wanted to keep my bills less so I didn't overspend what I needed to pay, and make sure I sent employees home if I didn't need them, and just do everything.
Jimmy,
I could.
You're the you have now closed the circle, because everybody I've ever known who owned a restaurant has said to me at some point, I wasn't sure if I was going to make payroll this week. I never heard you say that till just now. So the bottom line is that being in the restaurant work seems to be filled with highs and lows and call out the best faith and trust and faithfulness in us.
Hi, I'm John Perkins, Executive Director of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. You've been listening to our podcast, Working with Dan Doriani. The Center also offers conferences on faith and work throughout the United States. Our goal is to equip formal and informal leaders to make a difference in their corner of the world. We equip Christian leaders to run 10-hour faith and work cohorts on three continents. Please visit our website at faithandworkstl.org to see how your church or organization can form a faith and work cohort for people who have, or aspire to, a leadership role in their workplace.
So we just talked about those moments when we are inclined to question, doubt, these panic moments in the restaurant world. You know, Jimmy, you just referenced social media a little bit ago. And Mike, I don't know how much your places do social media, but in general, so much of current restaurant world is driven by image and fancy pictures and blah, blah, blah. And it's a bunch of, you know, presentation, marketing, whatever you want to call it. It tends to not really reflect the reality. So if you can, pull back the curtain a little bit for our listeners and tell them what the reality, what the struggles are like for a day-to-day operation in a restaurant. What do you think the typical diner, person, listener, customer might not know about the restaurant world that they would be surprised to know, that just kind of, you know, there's a struggle there, there's a challenge there. What can you let them in on?
Not a surprise in a bad way.
I think
roaches in the kitchen story, okay? Right, just right. Like, you know.
Well, I think that the biggest problem in the restaurant business is the people, period. And it's just, what do you expect when you have sinners moving, working together, serving people? You have customers, you have employees, you have purveyors and the like. You're just, nobody is perfect. And so whenever you have that together in a confined space and add pressure to it, you're going to have problems. So it could be the way that somebody understood something. You know, I have two brothers that work for me, and one won't talk to this guy because he said he needed olive oil on the soup one day. So he's like, that's it. I never talk to you again. So, and he's held true to that for 6 years. And so that happens. And his brother's here, and he's like funny guy, and he's just like, here's the soup. You know? And the guy's like, well, this guy does this and his brother does this. His brother's just as bad as him. I was like, no, he's trying to be funny. And it, like, but there's just the individual persons. And that's, to me, the hardest thing is, how do you take human beings and put them in a pressure cooker and then hope you know. And
hope everything works out well. Yeah.
And it's never going, you'll go through stretches where everything's cool for a while. And then one little thing, the girl that does the dishes, she takes a the sprayer for washing off the plates and she points it at her waiter and goes, poop. And sprays the waiter, and he's got to walk into the restaurant, and he's got water all down in front of him. And he's now mad and frustrated.
But of course, what also happens is, you know, this period of calm, little tiny things were happening, and then somebody sprays the water, and I go, and that reminds me of every last thing you've done in the last 6 weeks, and I held my tongue, and I'm going to tell you about every last thing that has gone wrong from your mouth and your hands. Mike,
that's what the
John.
One, that's what the one Italian gal said. He says, you got a people, you got a problem.
A lot of people have a sense that the restaurant life is challenging, and it certainly is. I think one thing, maybe that people intrinsically know or kind of have a sense of is how fickle the industry is. Mm. Taste change, ideas about what, you know, where they want to spend their money changes. I mean, we're sort of in an interesting moment right now, just economically, where people's attitudes towards spending money on food and dining out, I think, is beginning to change. And some of that was influenced through COVID and after COVID. And I just came across like a whole thread on Twitter. I don't know who the person was, but they were basically complaining about how much it cost them to go out to eat, and not at a fancy place, but they had a family with three kids and they were talking about going to Panera, and it cost them $75, which actually I don't think is all that unreasonable, but for five people. But to this person, it was enough that they didn't want to do it anymore. And the entire thread was a series of people agreeing with them that they were going to have to completely change their dining out habits. So if you're in a business where you're entirely dependent on people walking through your door, and there is a kind of agreed upon consensus for any number of years that your prices are right, that your product is something that people want, and then all of a sudden that shifts, and it can shift that quickly, that's a really frightening, scary place to be.
No, I'll go back to what he was saying about social media. Number one, I think all your customers know. They go to the grocery store, so they know what things cost there. They know price is going up on every item of food. It's going up on your liquor, beer, wine, and soda. It's going up on your labor. And so everybody knows that the prices are going up. But as far as what you were saying about social media, I'm on my people, and we're not good at it yet, that in order to get ahead in the service business, supposedly, you have to be on social media. And we're in the service business. And so I'm trying to get my guys to do more videos on Facebook, Instagram, things like that.
Let me switch to something just free form. The free form is, I like to ask some kind of free form question at the end. So here's your free form question. If you could do anything you wanted, no limits, in your restaurant, what would you do? Jimmy, you want to go first? Do you have an answer?
The first thing I would do is rehab the entire restaurant.
Okay.
Just clean up. I mean, I leased the building, so there's some things I'll do and some things I just push down the road on a lot of things, but I would rehab the entire building and make it that much nicer for people when they came in the door.
All right.
It's exactly what I was going to say is no limits on that thing. You redo the whole thing. I'm in the same boat. I lease the thing. I, you know, buy the building, completely rehab inside out, patio, and make everything as nice as could be. And wouldn't change the menu a whole lot. Would change it a little bit.
Yeah. John, what would you do?
If money wasn't an issue, I'd probably be inclined just to experiment across the board with a lot of different ideas that I tend to not, because money is an issue. And so I'm afraid of, you know, making a wrong decision about any number of things. And if I didn't have to worry about that, I might be more inclined to try new things, you know.
All right, I have one more question for you. What do you know or believe as a Christian about food that you wish people knew?
I'd say, you know, what they should know, if I can train my people to care about what they serve, this hamburger and these fries and this lettuce and this tomato, if I tell them, I want you to make this like you're serving it for your mother, they do it and it'll be good. Mm. And that's, you know, what I see on every single time. I tell my people, I said, you're serving your mother this meal. Take care of them.
John, you get the last word.
I think this kind of goes back to something you mentioned earlier about that sacred secular division. I think, you know, one of the things that I, many years ago, began to think through, thankfully some books that I read that really challenged me on the subject, was that, you know, God created the world as a physical place for us to enjoy, to touch, to feel, to eat, to taste, and that was an intentional thing that God did because he wanted us to have some measure of enjoyment and because he loves us. And so every time we eat together, we're not only forming community around it, but we're experiencing a very profound sense of God's love for us through something practical. And that doesn't have to be something that you just have to be a Christian to know. It's not true if you're a Christian. It's true, period. And so for every person that walks through the door of our restaurant, that dynamic is a real dynamic that whether I'm saying it explicitly to them or not, and I'm not saying it explicitly to them, they are feeling implicitly because we are loving them through the act of feeding them. And that's a reflection of the relationship that God has toward his children. And so that's something that I think inspires me, that motivates me. I hope that that flows through all of my employees and the ones that aren't believers, to the customers, to our guests, who more often than not are, you know, not believers. But that dynamic is something that, you know, is very powerful for me. So I'd like for people to think about that, engage with it, especially for those that are Christians that don't often think about food in that way.
So I'm interviewing you, but I'm going to pretend you just asked me, hey, Dan, what do you think about this? And I'm going to answer that question before we go. You know, God created us with bodies, and that was his design from the very beginning. And our bodies grow strong, and our bodies have pleasure through food. I mean, God ordained that we would have feasts together in the temple. And then he gave us a meal. It's a symbolic meal to show that he feeds us. We call it the Lord's Supper. We also know that eating together creates bonds, and God designed it that way. And I know in a good restaurant, you try to make that happen. So it's wonderful to eat with family, eat with friends, and to remember that food, with all of its good tastes and good nourishment, is something God designed for us to enjoy as his creatures before the fall, after the fall. And I got to tell you, I think we're going to eat forever. That's Amen. My view. And I can give you the exegesis behind it, but we're out of time. So Jimmy, thank you. John, thank you. Mike, thank you for sharing your wisdom about the restaurant and food industry.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Working with Dan Doriani is a production of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. We seek to promote faithfulness in the workplace, in education, in discipleship, and in the stories of believers who've applied their faith at work. If you want to put your faith to work and change your corner of the world, visit our website, the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. Look for faithandworkstl.org. That's one word. We'll help you start a cohort with like-minded believers who also want to practice their faith at work. This podcast is donor-supported. To keep us going, please donate on our website. Maybe more importantly, you can support us by listening, by subscribing, by sharing, by liking us, by posting us on your favorite platform, or go old school and tell a friend.